This is the Making Life Better segment. This is a segment where I bring in an expert and they share a little something, something that's going to support you to improve, help, make life feel that little bit more comfortable and a bit more ease. And this morning, my guest is Tracy Daniel, and she is the co-founder of Social and Emotional Learning Foundation. Tracy, thanks for coming in.
Good morning, Loretta. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for dancing so energetically.
You're very welcome. Anytime. I'm here to help.
That's what I'm here for. I'm making your life better. I love it. So we're going to talk about catching calm this morning because I think, and you know, we were in with my guests in the first hour, we're talking about the environment, sustainability, and sometimes, you know, that can just rise up in us a whole lot of sense of anxiousness and guilt and lots of really tricky feelings. And it's hard sometimes to be calm. But I found that when I'm with someone else who is calm, it's like it's contagious. Is it like yawning? Is calmness like yawning?
It can be like yawning. I think calmness and any state that one human is feeling can be contagious for another human. And I'm fairly sure there's some beautiful research around this. Mm. So when we think about calmness, I guess we want to think about being regulated. So that's a term that
I've heard the term. I have, and I think that it's sometimes gets bandied about, maybe by educators, maybe by people working with parents who are trying to work with little people who become, in inverted commas, unregulated.
Hmm.
So when we're regulated, does that just mean we're feeling okay?
Yeah, I think it can be helpful to think about it like being in balance.
Mm-hmm.
So that idea of being calm, it might be that we're calm, or it might be that we're feeling in balance. And when we feel in balance, we feel regulated and we feel able to think clearly and logically. We have access to that big thinking part of our brain, our big prefrontal cortex, and we can function in a way that makes sense to those around us.
Is that part of the brain where they talk about where executive function happens, where that decision-making process, where that rational side of things happens?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. And so for all humans, we operate the same. So from birth, we are obviously all born with a nervous system and the way that our nervous system develops over time is really dependent upon the way in which the people around us support our nervous system. So if we're thinking about that idea of regulation, we might often hear the term being self-regulated, and that can be used a lot in early childhood as well. We don't really love the term self-regulation so much. We really like to think about self-management, being able to self-manage as we move through life. So as we grow and we move into childhood and then adolescence and then into adulthood, we want to be able to learn the skills to self-manage so that we can, for example, go to work after we've perhaps had some distressing news. We can manage our state, we can self-manage, we can do what we need to do, and then afterwards we would generally always reach out. So the goal when we're thinking about regulation, we feel, is not self-regulation. It's always going to be co-regulation because our nervous systems are designed to always co-regulate. We do better together.
So when you're talking just then, I was picturing so many different people were flashing into my mind, examples of maybe unregulated states. I had Trump flash into my mind and his, you know, outlandish statements and his aggression and his, you know, from the, you know, wherever he's speaking from. I've seen also toddlers in supermarkets who are, you know, thrashing around on the ground because they can't have the insert thing here. You know, I think we see unregulated behaviour, and I think sometimes in children it's not acceptable, but in adults it is.
Mm. Yeah, that's a great observation. And it can be, you know, when we think about the communities that we live in and what is acceptable and not acceptable, we often notice that there is a bit of a mismatch between what is acceptable for children, what is not acceptable, and the same for adults. So if we think about emotions, going back to our nervous system that we're all born with, we all are born with the same emotions. We're born with core emotions as little tiny infants. Now, those emotions don't go anywhere. They don't go away. They stay with us. However, we can be taught, and we are taught, how to manage those emotions and whether or not those emotions are okay and not okay.
But are we taught sometimes resourcefully or unresourcefully?
Yeah, for sure. And it will vary, and we find it really varies. So when we're working with children in the preschool space, we might be working with parents and we might be working with educators who are coming from a perspective of, well, when I was raised,
yes,
I was taught or I was shown perhaps that being angry was not acceptable.
Yes.
Yeah. Go to your room, think about what you've done, and come out when you have something to say to me. Now, that was, we would, you know, our parents, our grandparents, they were all doing their absolute best, and they were coming from a place of what they knew at the time. And now we know a lot more around what is helpful and not helpful to support our children to manage these emotions. And so going back to your comment about Trump and what we think is acceptable and not acceptable behaviour, we do in a way, we've gotten to a place where we feel like it's not okay to be displaying anger, for example, walking down the street and being really, really angry, but it's okay to be joyful. And so we know that over time we have kind of structured ways, we've created these expectations of how we should act in a community, what's okay, what's not okay. What we know is that there is a very, very clear link between how our emotions were supported in early childhood and the rate of adult physical and mental health. And that link is, if we had poor experiences of being supported, and what we're talking about here is co-regulation.
I love how we've come back to it, yes.
Co-regulation. If we have had poor experiences of co-regulation in childhood, there is a direct link between higher rates of poor adult mental health and, fascinatingly, higher rates of poor adult physical health.
So what you're saying is how we learnt and how we were supported in our little years, maybe up to the age of 7, to deal with the big emotions that flow through us and to cope with stresses in life, there's a direct correlation to our mental health later in life.
Yeah.
Which makes me think, whilst we need to support people in later in life who right now are experiencing mental health challenges and physical health challenges, do we just need to put all our resources and money into how we support children with their emotions? Just because why put the mattress at the bottom of the cliff? Why don't we build the fence earlier?
Oh, I like that.
Do you like that?
I like that a lot. Yeah, look, we absolutely need to, and we are. We have lots and lots of programs available, and there is a real focus on the early years. I would say you know, these are practices that we can all use, human to human, around getting used to and getting better at co-regulation. But essentially, yeah, if we start at the start, we're going to see less of the issues that we are currently seeing. And so we really want to move into that space of getting very used to and comfortable ourselves with the idea of co-regulation. What is it? How do we do it? Why do we do it?
So do some people do it naturally? Like, are some people just great co-regulators in that the way they react to other people who might be heightened or unregulated, people sort of gravitate towards and think, you know what, I feel better when I'm around Jenny, so I'm just going to hang around Jenny. Like, does Jenny sort of have an inbuilt way of co-regulating?
Yeah, that's a great comment, and I think that that is the case. I think we do see that. Certainly when we're working with early childhood educators, we will often come across a team who will say, oh, the children love Jenny.
Mm.
They always gravitate to her, just exactly as you were saying. And when we look at what Jenny might be doing or how Jenny is behaving or how Jenny is positioning herself or the tone that she might be using, we notice that there are particular things that or ways that Jenny is being with that child that is absolutely helpful.
Okay, can we break those apart? Because I know I've teased people long enough on how do we actually co-regulate? How do we support someone else in emotion?
Yeah, it's a big question. And today we're going to really look at some simple ways, some easy to use, very accessible ways that we can start co-regulating our children and each other. So what we're really wanting to remember is that we don't want to push the child out of whatever they're feeling. So co-regulation is really about sitting with the emotion. So whatever emotion is coming at us, if I'm with a little child and they are feeling really angry, we want to send the message to that child that it's totally okay to be angry. Now, we don't want to confuse this with whatever actions come from your anger is fine. So it might not be okay to kick the dog. We don't do that. That's not pro-social. But it is okay to be angry. And so what we know is that there are particular things that we can do that helps our children to feel the emotion. So we want to invite them into that. It's okay to be angry. And in this house or in this early education centre, we invite all emotions and we're going to sit with you and you're going to get help and support as you move through this, as you make sense of it. We're going to be able to give you some language to understand it, to name it. So next time that this big feeling might come on, you might be able to use a word. I feel angry. And then you can get some help around that.
I would imagine that process could be quite challenging for some adults to work through, because for them to sit with someone else, maybe it's a child, maybe it's a colleague who's angry, can be sometimes quite confronting, because we don't, it's not something that we normally would do because of past ways of thinking and past, you know, experiences that we've had.
Mm.
There gets to be a little bit of work potentially for the adult first, I'm guessing.
Absolutely, yes. So that idea that you started off with earlier, that it can be a little bit contagious. So it can be, emotions can be contagious. And so this is a practice that we want to support grown-ups to be able to do when they are regulated. We can't co-regulate if we are dysregulated.
Right. So if the child is angry and we are angry at the child and we want to support them in their anger, us being angry doesn't help.
Doesn't help at all.
Right.
Yeah. It really doesn't help, and that will end up in a hot mess generally.
I think we've all been in that hot mess.
We have all been in that hot mess. Mm. And so we do say this is a practice, and because it is actually something that most grown-ups need to practice, and you may not get it straight away. You might be able to sit calmly and in a regulated state with your child on this day, but on the next day, you may have had really poor sleep. You may have 100 other variables that are going on in your mind, and you're not able to access that state as much. So it is a practice, and we want to support grown-ups to be looking at the little children in their lives through the lens of our little children need to access your big thinking brain when their big thinking brain is offline. So the first step definitely is to check in with yourself. If you notice that that child is really dysregulated or they're moving into a dysregulated state, am I in a position to be able to co-regulate? How do I feel?
We're speaking with Tracy Daniel from Social Emotional Learning Foundation. We're going to come back just after these short announcements to really dive in that little bit deeper. And you're listening to 94.7 The Pulse, where it's 24 minutes past 10 o'clock. And we're speaking with Tracy Daniel from Social and Emotional Learning Foundation. We're talking about co-regulation and really how we can support our young people and support anyone around us, really, to be able to catch calm, to be able to be in a place of regulation. And Tracy, I think when we left off this conversation, you were just about to say, you know, when you notice a child that's going into a dysregulated state, what things are they doing that we would that would trigger us to say, oh, it looks like they're going to need me to co-regulate with. They're going to need to access, as you said before, the big part of my brain because theirs isn't actually online at the moment. What's happening for that child? What does it look like?
Yeah, so it can look really different for children. It can look really different for all of us. So some of the common things we might see and that we might be really familiar with is big, loud behaviours. So when children become dysregulated, they go into one of two states, and we generally see hyperarousal and hypoarousal, which we can talk about another time.
Yeah, I think that's a whole other
conversation.
Yeah.
And they look quite different. So one stage where they will be really big and they'll be loud, they'll be using maybe lots of language, they might be yelling, they might be crying, they might be using their body, they'll have lots and lots and lots of excess energy. And that might be a cue to us that, oh, they're really feeling some intense emotions. And generally when children get into this state, they will lose track of what initially caused that to get into that state.
So and true. And they don't even know.
They don't know.
Yeah.
And it is somewhat irrelevant because what we're wanting to do before we're able to move on to any kind of problem solving or finding a solution, or perhaps there might be a little boundary that needed to be put in place, we need to get through the moment of dysregulation.
So asking what happened, now they need to go to apologize to someone, all of that, it's just like saying blah 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 blah. It's not going in, is it?
Yeah, we may as well be talking another language.
Which, yeah.
Yep. And certainly when we come to some really simple steps that can be helpful or not helpful when we're co-regulating. Too much language is one of those things that is often unhelpful.
So you said that there could be some big behaviour. What else could there be?
There could be the opposite to that. So sometimes we will see children who will internalise when they become dysregulated. So they might withdraw into themselves. We see this a lot in very young children and in babies where they are responding to an external the external environment and they are not sure what's happening, so they will be very quiet, they might not make eye contact, and they will kind of close in on themselves. Those moments are much harder to notice.
I can imagine, especially if you've got a couple of children and one is making the big loud sound and the other one is withdrawing, where we often go to the loud, don't we?
We will go to the loud. Yeah, the squeaky wheel definitely gets the oil. And that is something that comes up often when we're working with early childhood educators. And that makes complete sense. And particularly if those behaviours are perhaps so big that we really need to take care of those for safety reasons, that's absolutely fine.
So let's walk through these four simple steps that you've got. They might not always feel simple, but what's the first thing that we get to do?
So the first thing we'd be looking at, if you have clocked that this child is in a dysregulated state, we'd be asking you to think about your proximity. And so what we mean by proximity is, where am I standing? How far away am I from this child? Because if I'm too far away, it can be really hard for that child to feel that I am in this situation with someone. So we want to be close enough that the child can be aware that we're there to help, but not too close, because we can be a bit looming.
In the face.
In the face, and that can have the opposite effect of what we're trying to achieve. So think about proximity and think about, am I standing, am I sitting, and how old is this child? If we've got a really teeny tiny child, we probably want to be really down on their level so that we're not looming over them. It's really helpful if we can have our beautiful, kind faces available, because children get so much information from the expression on our face. So a kind, soft face, which can be hard if there's lots of dysregulation and loud noises and big movements. So that's the first step.
And so then number two, that calm piece comes in again. Use a calm voice. And you've written here that tone registers before language. So sometimes it doesn't matter what you say, but how you say it.
Yeah, definitely. So trying to really check in with ourselves around what I say, but definitely how I say it. Because when children are in that dysregulated state, they will hear the tone of our voice before they actually can make sense of what we said. And often they can't make sense of what we said anyway. So we will support and we'll encourage people to use very calm, kind tones. And that goes hand in hand with having our face available. Kind, soft face, calm, kind tone, and less language.
Is there a point, I think there's always a tipping point with things, isn't there, where the voice becomes sing-songy and babyish? Oh, what's the matter with you? Like, that's actually not helpful either, is it?
Look, it would depend on the situation. I think it would be, I mean, singing, there's a reason why we sing with little tiny babies.
Okay,
and,
okay.
You know, that's around, it is regulating. So that kind of sing-songy up and down can be helpful, but it would really depend on the scenario. It would depend on the child and what they were presenting to us, what kind of emotion they were throwing our way. Yeah.
Which leads us beautifully to number three.
Name the emotion.
There's probably a number of adults who can't name any emotions themselves. They've probably got happy, sad, angry. Happy, sad, angry, that's about it.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And that's one of the reasons, one of the many reasons we want to get really good at naming the child's emotional experience. So if we can hazard a guess, if a child is really sad and they've got tears streaming down their face, and we might say, oh, I can see you're sad. So we're naming the emotion. If we've got the emotion wrong, they'll probably tell us, I'm not sad, I'm frustrated. Mm. Well, wonderful. So we're now in the space of the child having the experience of, I am feeling this thing that feels yuck, and I have my very important person here with me, and they are seeing my experience. And how do they know that we're seeing it? Because we've said it out loud. You're feeling sad. And then we sit with that. So often co-regulation can look and feel like we're not doing much at all. But in fact, we're doing a lot. We're doing a lot that's developmentally helpful, because we've got to give that child time to hear what we've said. So, and remember, we're saying it's often the tone, not what we're actually saying. And then we wait with them.
And, you know, and point four is avoid using too much language. So that's just holding space.
Holding space, yeah.
Which we can do with adults as well. Say, you look like you're really frustrated.
Mm.
And then just leave it in that space for them to process. And am I frustrated? No, I'm actually not frustrated. I'm actually just really disappointed. Like for that to, internal conversation to be had.
Yeah.
And I suppose if we start this with children, if we support this understanding and this that moving through feelings and being with feelings, does it mean at the other end, when we are adults, you spoke about being able to self-manage. Mm. Is the process that we start with children in the co-regulation, does it mean that as adults our self-management skills are better?
Yeah, it does. And so what we're really leaning into is a way of being able to recognize, name, feel, and move through these emotions. And if we're able to have help and support in early childhood to do that, it's building skills. So, and the skills that we are building are, it's okay to feel these emotions. These are normal. This is healthy. I don't need to suppress it or pop it down in my body anywhere where it's going to pop out 25 years later in a less helpful way. What I'm going to learn is, what do I do with these feelings that I'm feeling in a pro-social way? How do I manage them in a pro-social way so that I can move through the emotion, which is, as we say, part of being born with a nervous system, and that's not going to go anywhere. And the key component in all of this is that it's done in relationship. So children in the early years can only learn these skills in relationship with an adult. And that's where the co comes in the co-regulation. The co is you, the person, how you position yourself, what you say, what kind of look you have on your face, what kind of tone you have. That is so important and helpful in sending that really clear, developmentally helpful message. This is really normal. This is really healthy. I'm here to help you. We're going to sort this out together. I'm not going to solve the problem. Well, I might solve the problem, but first we're going to get back into a regulated state so we can access that big thinking part of our brain, and then we can solve the problem together.
Tracy Daniel, thank you so much for unpacking co-regulation, and I think also unpacking the ways that we can be supporting our children, our little people, and I'm guessing this works with teenagers as well, and all through to understand and connect into emotion. Because as you said right at the start, we're born with emotions that don't go away. And if we don't learn how to deal with them in small ways when we, you know, don't get the toy that we want, it's much, much, much harder later in life when there are bigger stresses that impact us. And as you said, there's that big correlation between children who haven't been supported in childhood to understand emotions and our mental health in later in life. Thanks so much for coming in and just unpacking it. I know there's so much more we could have said.
There is. We could do days on co-regulation.
Alone. And I know that you have a fantastic event coming up out at, I want to say Mount Dunedin.
Mount Dunedin Estate.
Yeah. What's the date of that?
Tuesday the 16th of April in the evening. Starts at 6, goes till 9 o'clock. That's a charity event that we are running collaboration with Lael Stone, who's a local hero here in Geelong, doing lots of parenting work, and Dr. Billy Garvey, who's a developmental paediatrician based in Melbourne.
And the theme of the evening?
Theme of the evening is attuned relationships in childhood development. So we'll be talking about really easy, simple ways that we can attune to either our own children or the children that we're working with to activate social and emotional development.
Tracy Daniel from the Social and Emotional Learning Foundation, thanks so much for your time this morning. It's been a hoot.
Thanks, Loretta.
My absolute pleasure.